Okay, so I wanted to start by just providing you a brief, essentially graphical summary of the Godunov scheme that we introduced last time. So we went through this in great some detail, and so just to remind everyone, and essentially to bring this into a sort of a compact graphical picture, let me draw the following. So as we discussed last time, this Godunov type scheme, which really puts the Riemann problem at the heart of the algorithm, is one example of a so-called REA or RIA algorithm, which stands for Reconstruct, Evolve, Average. And so these are the three basic steps of such an algorithm. So let me actually start from down here with the reconstruction step. So essentially the scheme starts by defining a piecewise polynomial function computed from cell averages of the previous time step. So essentially this will look like this. So let's assume we're at some time step t equals tn. And let's assume we have here our spatial grid points xi minus one, xi plus one. And so there are different ways in which we can reconstruct the actual solution, or what we think is the approximate solution to the problem from cell averages. The most simple ansatz is to just have a piecewise constant approximation, where we just keep essentially the cell averages that we already computed. And that's exactly Godunov's original proposal, so the original idea. So our piecewise polynomial function will just be a piecewise constant function. And so this will look something like this, maybe. So just to give an example. Okay, and so here we have our cell interfaces, where we solve the Riemann problem in the previous time step. So this would be xi minus 1/2, xi plus 1/2. And so as I just mentioned, there's different ways of doing this. We could have also reconstructed this as piecewise linear. So maybe this would then sort of look something like this. That would be a different choice. And in fact, we're going to explore such options later. And by later, I mean next week. So it will turn out that more sort of sophisticated ways to reconstruct the function will actually give rise to higher order accuracy of the scheme. The sort of bare type Godunov scheme is just first order in space and time. And so, doing some more elaborate reconstruction actually helps us increasing the order of convergence and accuracy. So the second step, so for now, as I said, we'll just focus on piecewise constant. We'll just essentially illustrate the basic choices and ideas here. So the second step is evolve. So we use this reconstructed function as initial data for Riemann problems at each individual grid cell. And then we exactly or approximately solve those Riemann problems. So again, here we have our grid points, xi and xi plus one. And these Riemann problems are now defined at the interfaces. And so we know for a system of, say, three equations. So let's say we are focusing on the Euler equations, but this scheme is very general. So it can be essentially applied to any system of conservation laws, to any system of hyperbolic conservation laws. So for the Euler equations, we always have three nonlinear waves. And let's assume we have here a left rarefaction wave. The contact is continuity, which is the dashed line here, and then perhaps a forward shock. So this would be one rarefaction wave solution and a three shock. And let's assume at the neighboring cell interface, we have slightly different initial data, and let's assume maybe we have something like, just to illustrate a few possibilities here, we have a left shock and a forward shock. And then again, our contact is continuity. So it would be a one and a three shock solution. And so we evolve this for some, we take the solution of the Riemann problem for some time, delta t. So if this is Tn, then here we have Tn plus delta t. And then we'll average again over these grid cells, we'll average the solution, the exact solution from the two neighboring Riemann problems into a average that will then use for reconstruction and initial data for the next time step. And so here we noted last time that the neighboring Riemann problems must not intersect so that we don't have any waves crossing during the time step delta t, so that we can sort of decouple all the individual cells and therefore all the individual Riemann problems. So we can then assume that they don't influence each other. And so this gave us a constraint on the time step. And that constraint looks very familiar. It's kind of a CFL-like condition. So we were finding that delta t has to be smaller than delta x divided by half times the maximum signal speed on the grid. And that will define our time step. And then finally, in step three, we'll average over the individual Riemann problems. And find new averages ui n plus one at t equals t n plus one. So let me just try to illustrate this a little bit. So we'll get something, maybe something like this. You know, maybe solution, the actual solution is something like this or so. Maybe there's, here's actually two shock waves, so it's not as continuous here. But anyway, so just think of this. We get some exact solution from the Riemann problem, which we denoted by Vn and x comma Tn plus one. And we average those over the grid cells to get average values here. And those are our new ui n ui plus one Okay, and from those cell averages, then we can again reconstruct a piecewise polynomial function that gives rise to new initial data for the Riemann problems at the cell interfaces at this new time step tn plus one. So this is essentially the basic idea of the Godunov type scheme. And now, as I promised last time, we wanted to show that this scheme that we derived in this way essentially is actually a conservative scheme, and that it also actually picks out the entropy solution, so the correct weak solution to the problem. And so this is now the program for the next, say, 20 minutes or so. Maybe before that, I should ask and to see if there are any questions so far.
Yeah, I have one, Daniel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in step one, if you're using a piecewise linear reconstruction, are you not losing the Riemann problem for step two?
No, not necessarily. So yeah, that is a good question. So it's not always possible to continuously connect neighboring grid cells with piecewise linear functions. And so you will typically have, as I indicated here, essentially, you will typically have discontinuities across the cell interfaces. And that has to do also with, essentially it has to do with two things. One is that you need to make sure that the cell average still stays the same. So that is one constraint. And the second constraint usually is that for other reasons, one has to involve slope limiters. So you cannot arbitrarily change the slope, or you cannot get arbitrarily steep slopes, because that lead to instabilities of the scheme. And so there's two constraints that need to be satisfied. And so usually you end up with discontinuities across the cell interfaces, and those would define the new Riemann problems.
But you have the discontinuities, but you don't have a constant data.
Yes,
inside.
That's correct. That's correct. And so the interesting thing is that this actually doesn't matter. So what you would actually assume then is you take the left state here at this point and the right state at this point, and assume as if they were constant across the cell, and you solve that Riemann problem. And you can show that in practice that actually doesn't matter, and it actually provides you the correct solution, and it is even more accurate than doing the Riemann problem for the green data that I indicated here for the actual piecewise constant data. There's also attempts actually where you solve the so-called general Riemann problem, where you actually look at the initial data problem with the data as specified here. So with an actual linearly, for example, varying data. And you can also solve that Riemann problem. It's more complicated and a lot more effort. But in the end, you can show that it doesn't matter in terms of accuracy. So doing this sort of more complicated general Riemann problem doesn't buy you anything in terms of accuracy in the end. So you can be a bit more lazy and just do a simplified Riemann problem. In the end, and that's the interesting conclusion, it's really just about the way of how you reconstruct the function. And that is the sort of determining point about the accuracy of the overall algorithm.
Okay, thank you. So I guess more stuff that's not intuitive.
Right. Right. Yes. So we'll try to discuss a little bit these higher order schemes next week, where we'll look a little bit at some of these issues about reconstruction. And that's essentially all what modern codes really do. So in order to try to get to higher accuracy, to higher order of accuracy, they all play essentially with the reconstruction method, leaving everything else the same. So that's typically what's done.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Anything else? Okay, if not, then let's move on and actually show that this algorithm, which is arguably not intuitive at all, that this is actually a conservative scheme and that it also satisfies the entropy condition so that we can be sure that it actually picks out the correct weak solution of the problem if it converges. And so this is the following statement. The Godunov method can be written in conservative form. And so remember, this was essentially the definition of a conservative scheme. So here we have the difference of the numerical intercell fluxes. And so the specific Godunov intercell numerical flux is given by the physical flux of the conservation law, evaluated for the exact Riemann solution at the corresponding cell interface. So we plug in V at xi plus 1/2, so at the corresponding intercell, for these initial data, ui and ui plus 1. And if the time step delta t satisfies this CFL-like condition. Where these lambda are as usual the eigenvalues of our Jacobian. And statement is Godunov method consistent and consistent with the entropy condition. And so I just wanted to go through this derivation real quick to show you how this result arises. And so essentially we do this in two steps. So first we show that we can write it in conservative form, and then we'll show that the scheme defined in this way satisfies the discrete entropy conditions and is therefore guaranteed to converge to the entropy solution if it converges. Okay, so essentially the starting point here is that if we put ourselves to some time step Tn, we know that Vn, which we defined as essentially the concatenation of all the local solutions to the local Riemann solutions, to the Riemann problem, that this is the exact solution of, you know, all these Riemann problems. And so it's an exact solution also of the system of conservation laws, at least locally in time, until the next time step. And so we can look at the integral version of this. So we plug this into our system of conservation laws and integrate this over a cell, so over a control volume. So here we integrated out the time direction already. So this is Vnt, so the time derivative of Vn. And so we get Vn at x, tn plus 1 minus Vn at x, tn, where only the spatial integral remains. And then for the flux term, we can integrate out the spatial part, and the time integral remains. So we have this flux difference here. Okay, this was not good use of space here. Dt. So it's just integrating our conservation law, making use of the fact that Vn is an exact solution. Here, we can write these two terms here the following way. So this is by definition our cell average, according to the Godunov scheme. This is our cell average ui at t equals tn plus 1 times delta x. And so this integral, the second term, analogously, is our cell average uin times delta x. So we'll just note this and use it later. Now we'll massage essentially the flux terms a little bit. So first we'll note that Vn is this being the cell-similar solution, so the solution to the Riemann problem, it is constant along radial rays through the cell interface. And so it's constant in particular along the cell interface during this time step Tn to Tn plus 1. So let me just scroll up here. So the Riemann problem, cell-similar solution, right? So the solution Vn here, let's call this, so this is Vn. So the solution along the cell interface is a radial ray, and therefore the solution must be constant along here. So it's constant in this interval from Tn to Tn plus delta t. And so let me just write this down here, solution of Riemann problem on this radial ray. And so VN at the cell interface is just given by this local Riemann problem, ignoring all the rest of the domain that is defined at the cell interface. And we denoted this previously by W. And so this is accordingly for the other cell interface. And so we can write these flux integrals just as delta t times the flux. And so we are already there. And we just denote this here by star. So as you can see here, we can rewrite these integrals in terms of the cell averages. And so for these flux integrals here, since we just plug in the cell similar solution here and we evaluate it on the cell interfaces, we can actually get rid of the integrals and we just have delta t multiplying the flux at the initial time tn. And so this brings the integral version here in a familiar form. And so if we now define the numerical flux, as this, we just identify physical flux along the cell interface. With the, in this way, with the numerical flux, we have the form of a conservative scheme. So then, we have this familiar form. Scheme is okay. Let's see. This in conservative form. There are two subtle, as you may remember, there are two subtle conditions that we need to show, namely that this numerical flux is actually consistent with the physical flux, and this seems obvious. And then also that the numerical flux is Lipschitz continuous. And so we just make these two quick remarks. So if ui n equals ui plus one n, let's say define this as u tilde, then we have a trivial Riemann problem, which just amounts to a constant state in that across that cell interface and during that time step tn. So this will just be constant. So technically speaking, it's a trivial rare refraction wave where simply nothing happens. And so we find that G of u tilde is F of u tilde. And so the numerical flux is consistent. And G is also Lipschitz continuous. If F, the physical flux, is Lipschitz continuous, which we need to assume for the Godunov type scheme to be applicable. And so this essentially concludes the first part where we just rewrote the scheme in a different way that looks fairly simple. So it turns out that for this conservative scheme, the only information we really need for an algorithm to update essentially initial data in this form is really only the Riemann problem along the cell interfaces. And I'll get to that later of how to actually simplify this even further. As some of you may experience right now, solving the Riemann problem for the Euler equations explicitly is actually quite some work. So that's the problem on the current problem set. And sort of writing down the whole solution is actually quite some effort. And so computationally, this is fairly expensive. The only thing that we actually really need to know is just the solution along the cell interfaces. And so there are clever ways of so-called approximate Riemann solvers where one tries to speed up things by getting some approximate solution that approximates the Riemann problem along the cell interfaces. And so we actually don't need to solve the full Riemann problem at every cell interface, and that speeds up the computation a lot. And so this will be the next chapter on approximate Riemann solvers, because none of the hydro codes these days actually has an exact Riemann solver built in, but rather makes use of such approximate Riemann solvers to make the computational problem feasible.
But Daniel, don't you need those the Riemann problem everywhere so you can do the average?
That's a really good point. So the way that I've introduced the problem here in this graphical summary here seems to suggest that you would need that. So and you're totally right. In noting that essentially here we need the full solution to make the cell average. But what we've just done right now is essentially to rewrite the scheme and bring it into this form, that once you do this initially for the initial time step, so the only time where you actually need to know the solution exactly is at the initial time step u0. There you do averaging and you get initial data ui at n equals 0. And then you can simply update the cell averages from t to tn by just making use of the fact that you know that you need to know the flux function at the cell interfaces. So the solution of the Riemann problem at the cell interfaces. And so actually, you only need very little information to update the scheme and to iterate in time. And so that makes the whole idea very powerful and sort of very comparatively inexpensive compared to the sort of actual idea behind it. So yeah, to make a long answer short, so actually, what you only really require is the Riemann solution at the cell interfaces, and that's very little information. Does that roughly answer your question?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. And so now that we know that we can write it in this in this conservative scheme, and so this is exactly what I was alluding to a few seconds ago. So in the actual evolution of a hydrocode, you will actually use essentially this. You will implement a scheme of this form here. So you essentially forget you essentially forget about this construction that we did here. And so all you actually implement is a scheme, an update scheme of this form that will effectively do this, but only require very little information about the individual Riemann problems. Okay, so now we know with the Lax-Wendorf theorem that if we have a conservative scheme, if it converges, it will converge to a weak solution of the conservation law. Now we'd like to show that we converge to the correct solution, meaning to the solution, to the unique solution that is that satisfies the entropy inequalities. And so again, here we'll make use of the fact that if we look at this at the given time step, the local in time solution Vn is again an exact solution to the Riemann problem and satisfies the entropy condition, assuming that we that the Riemann solver that we wrote or that we are using here actually picks out the correct entropy solution locally. So that is the assumption. So then let's say we have some entropy and entropy flux pair of the equations. And so our goal will be then to show that the entropy inequalities as given by these entropy-entropy flux pairs are satisfied. So just to remind you that these were the entropy inequalities. So if we look at this in an integral version, let's integrate this again over the local cell. So using our local cell as a control volume. Then, so here I'm already separating out. So I have already integrated over time here. And I'm splitting this already into different terms. At x and tn plus tn, sorry, dx. And then we have the entropy flux terms. Here I've integrated already over space. And we're left with the time integrals plus 1/2, comma t. T minus I minus 1/2, comma T T, and it has to be smaller or equal than 0. I just refer to this here as double star. We'll need this in a second. So let's rewrite these integrals a little bit, and we'll see that we actually find a realization of the discrete entropy condition. And then by the theorem that we showed last time, if a scheme satisfies the discrete entropy condition, it will, if the scheme is convergent, it will converge to an entropy solution. So first thing we'll note here is that, again, the N is is piecewise constant initially in our cell. So this is just saying that the initial data to the Riemann problem is piecewise constant. And so these integrals over the entropy phi are actually just given by delta x times phi at vn of x comma tn. And so remember that vn, so our, at tn, so at the initial time step for our Riemann problem, for the local Riemann problem, was just defined as the cell average. And so we can, the cell average from the previous time step. So we can just write this as I minus 1/2, I plus 1/2 Vn x comma Tn, which is by definition, UIN. So this is the definition of our averaging of the last step of our scheme. So we can write these entropy integrals in this way. And now let's look at the flux integrals. So let's define a numerical entropy flux essentially as given by, motivated by the integrals above, where we integrate over the physical entropy flux psi. So this, oops, it's essentially motivated by these terms up here. And then again, making use of the fact that this is constant between Tn and Tn plus one. We can just write this as psi of Vn xi plus 1/2 comma t. And also we can verify that it is consistent with the physical entropy flux. So if UIN equals UI plus 1N, so if we're in the trivial case, trivial Riemann problem case, then we find that G U tilde U tilde equals psi of u tilde. So the two fluxes are consistent. And so G is, satisfies the definition of a numerical entropy flux. And so with essentially this at hand, we can reformulate the above integral version of our entropy inequalities in the following way. So let's start with the left-hand side here. Phi of ui n plus one. Massage that a little bit and then plug in the integral version of the entropy inequalities. So remember, this is the left-hand side of our, of the numerical entropy inequalities, of the numerical entropy condition we derived last time. So this, by definition of our cell averages, we have this, and now we can make use of the fact that phi is a convex function. So that was part of the definition of an entropy and entropy flux pair. And so turns out that for convex functions, we can actually pull out the integral and then replace the equal sign by this inequality here. So this is just a general property for convex functions. So we can put phi under the integral here. And now we're almost done. So now we'll just plug in the rest of the integral version that we found above. And so this is uin, and then replacing the flux integrals by our numerical flux. Ui plus one n minus g of ui minus one n ui n. And so you may remember that this is exactly the definition of the discrete entropy inequalities. And so this essentially concludes the proof or the derivation of this result. So this Godunov type scheme guarantees to converge. If it's convergent, then it'll converge to the correct entropy solution. Okay, any questions on this? Okay, so if not, let me move on. So the next chapter, as I already mentioned a few minutes ago, is essentially to now look at variants of the Godunov scheme. In particular, the first modification that we want to look at, and that is highly relevant for practical applications, is to replace an exact Riemann solver to compute the flux here at the cell interfaces by an approximate Riemann solver. So this will be our next topic to deal with and discuss approximate various versions of approximate Riemann solvers that you find in modern hydrodynamics codes. And then the second modification will be to change the reconstruction scheme to obtain higher order accuracy. So that will be the topic thereafter. However, before I start the discussion on approximate Riemann solvers, I wanted to make one additional remark on weak solutions and coordinate transformations, something that I discussed with Boris last week during office hours. And so I think that's an important point that I wanted to make and that I want to sort of present to everyone to make sure this everyone has heard of this. And that sort of connects to some of the discussion we had last time about weak solutions and the difference between conservative and non-conservative schemes. So the fact that in a quasi-linear, so non-conservative formulation of the equations, typically you get different weak solutions. And so you would not, for example, I demonstrated and showed you this simple example of Berger's equation where the sort of, where the quasi-linear non-conservative formulation sort of provided the wrong shock speeds and therefore the wrong, or say the wrong weak solution, a different weak solution than what you would find with the correct conservative formulation. And there are sort of more subtleties. And so I wanted to expand on this a little bit. Namely, even if you have a conservative formulation, different conservative formulations that are equivalent on the level of smooth solutions may still have different weak solutions. So I just wanted to illustrate this. And sort of the key takeaway point from this will be that we have to look at the so-called correct correct conservative formulation. In our case, as physicists, we have to look at the at conservative formulations that express conservation of physical quantities and that are actually associated with conservation laws, such as energy and momentum conservation and mass conservation, for example. And so let's look at the following setup essentially. So let's say we have some smooth solution. So let's say a classical solution. So it only needs to be C1 to be precise. To a system of conservation laws. So we'll just write it down to give it a name. Let's say this is equation one. And now let's say we make a coordinate transformation. So we just change the definition of our conserved variables by some coordinate transformation. And then we want to reconsider the conservation law associated with those transformed conserved variables. So let's say we map U to a new set of conserved variables, U tilde, that we find by applying some smooth coordinate transformation function H. So some change of conserved variables. Then we'll find actually that U tilde is a smooth solution of the following quasi-linear equation. And so you can, this is actually something you showed on the first problem set. So the matrix B is given by this expression here. And V is any state vector in Rn, Rm, where m is the number of equations. And now let's assume that we can actually rewrite this as a conservation law. So let's assume that there exists a function, a flux G, such that we can rewrite with this property here that the Jacobian equals B for all state vectors, then we can rewrite this in a conservative form. So let's call it star. Then we find that we can bring this into this conservation law. And so this whole construction essentially shows that if U tilde is a C1, so a classical solution, or U tilde is a classical solution of 2, and so let's call this conservation law 2, and our original conservation law as 1, then U tilde is a solution of this new conservation law if and only if U, which is H of U tilde, is a classical solution to 1. And so one can actually relax this a little bit. And it's actually also true if these functions are continuous, or say Lipschitz continuous, to be more precise. But the equivalence of solutions actually breaks down once you get to the to weak solutions. So this breaks down for weak solutions. And I mean, this is essentially because the whole construction of deriving this second conservation law from, the second conservation law from the first one involved or sort of require the existence of derivatives, and they are obviously not given in the case of discontinuous solutions, in the case of the, of weak solutions. And so one very simple example to just illustrate this a little bit is, again, Berger's equation, where you can nicely see that weak solutions of the inviscid Berger's equation and a sort of on the smooth level equivalent conservation law are actually not equivalent. So if we then look at this UT, and then we have 1/2 U squared as our flux. So say this is our conservation law one. And now let's consider a transformation. So let's look at U tilde, which is defined as U cube. So one can do the math and finds that the corresponding flux for the new equation will be 3/4 U tilde to the power of 4/3. So essentially you take the conservation law, multiply by 3 U squared. So you look at this in the quasi-linear way, multiply by 3 U squared, and then just rewrite this. So this is 3/4 U^4 x 0. And so you get the new conservation law U tilde T plus G of U tilde x equals 0. And this is conservation law for U cube. And so now, again, these two conservation laws will have the same smooth solutions. And again, the statement holds that if one solution, if U tilde is a solution, then the transformed solution is also a solution of the original inviscid Berger's equation. But if we look at weak solutions, we'll find that the shock speeds actually don't match. And so the weak solutions can in general not be the same. So let's say we have, look again at a Riemann problem for contractive initial data. So that will result in the formation of a shock. And so the unique solution to this will be a shock and the shock speed, as you remember, is given by the Rankine-Ugonio jump conditions. And so we can write down these jump conditions for the two conservation laws and we'll find that they actually don't match. So, say for our original conservation law, we'll get the shock speed is given by the flux difference divided by the difference in state vectors. So we have 1/2 UL squared minus 1/2 U right squared divided by UL minus UR. And so just expanding that, we'll find that this is just given by 1/2 U left plus U right. So just the average of the two states of the Riemann problem. And so if we do the same exercise for the transformed conservation law, we have to plug in the new fluxes here. And so this is sorry, this should be UL cube here. So this would be UL power of 4 minus UR power of 4 divided by UL power of 3 minus U right power of 3. And so this is not the shock speed that we would infer from the original equation, at least as long as we actually have a discontinuity, meaning that UL is not equal to UR. And so as in the case as last time, where we were comparing weak solutions of quasi-linear systems to those of corresponding conservation laws, we find that these weak solutions differ in their shock speed. And so we'll pick up different wave propagation speeds. So maybe I'll quickly try and find it here. So we were pointing this out somewhere here, essentially, where if we started with, hope you can see that, yeah. If we started again with this Riemann problem here for the Invisit-Berger's equation, UL is greater than U right. We start at x equals 0, that's the initial discontinuity. So this will be compressive data due to the fact that the flux is convex. So we have 1/2 U squared. So F prime is greater than 0. And so this will correspond to a shock that will travel to the right. And so after some time t, the wavefront will have reached some location out here. And so for one formulation of the conservation law, it will have reached this location, while for the other one, it will maybe have reached this location or so. So we'll actually find completely different weak solutions here. In a fairly similar manner as when we were actually comparing quasi-linear formulations with the corresponding conservation law. And so this is why one always has to be very careful when looking at the equations and the formulation of the equation. So we have to always make sure that the actual conservative formulation we're looking at solves or corresponds to actual physical conservation laws of quantities that we expect to be physically conserved. Okay, so this was just essentially a follow-up on what we did last time and some of the discussion that we had during the office hours, but I thought that it was important enough to mention here. Are there any questions on this? And Boris, I hope this also cleared up some of the questions that we discussed on Wednesday.
Yeah, my questions really have to do with the Euler equations being a limit of something like the Navier-Stokes equation, which has second order terms. And if you have the two solutions in different coordinate systems for the Navier-Stokes equations, they might be continuous the whole way through, which would mean that they are the same. And as you move epsilon to zero, they should go to the same weak solution.
Oh, right. Okay. So yeah, right. So if you were looking essentially at a coordinate transformation of the Navier-Stokes equation, we would have a sequence of you were mentioning essentially that there would be a sequence of classical solutions that would be the same, but then in the limit. You mean that they would have different weak solutions? Is that what do you mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. And then I think it boils down to the question of whether these coordinate transformations would be equivalent. So if the coordinate transformation on the of something like the Navier-Stokes equations would result in something that is equivalent to the coordinate transformation of the Euler equations.
And yeah, I think that they aren't. Right. You get extra terms.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Any other points on this? Okay. If not, then let's quickly start with our next chapter on approximate Riemann solvers. So the sort of first modification that we can make to the simplest version, so of this RIA algorithm of the original Godunov scheme. Okay, so essentially, and this is sort of an important field for actual practical applications, and so essentially any hydrodynamics code that you might get your hands on at some point will allow you to choose between a range of different approximate Riemann solvers. So typically, different approximate Riemann solvers are implemented, and one can experiment with them. They have different properties, and we'll discuss these. They will differ in some of the details, and some of those details are actually quite important. Some Riemann solvers have certain advantages, and others have certain disadvantages. And so, depending on the case, sort of the problem that you want to study. You can make advantage of, or you may choose one Riemann solver over the other, depending on the properties of the solutions that that you hope to find. The general motivating idea for this is that, as I mentioned, these Godunov type methods, or the original Godunov method, is actually computationally fairly expensive because you have to solve potentially tens of thousands to millions of Riemann problems at a given time step, depending on the grid size. So depending on how many cells and so how many cell interfaces you have in a given problem. And so it's the sort of single most expensive and computationally demanding task of such an algorithm. And so the idea is here really to save on computational costs and try to find something, some approximate way of specifying the solution that is much cheaper than solving the full Riemann problem. And that's really motivated by the idea that all we actually need to know is just the solution to the Riemann problem on the cell interfaces themselves. And so let me just note this here real quick. As one must solve a Riemann problem at every cell interface at each time step. And especially if you're in multi dimensions, so in two or three spatial dimensions, then this will be a huge number. But all we need is the local solution to the Riemann problem at the cell interfaces So Vn xi plus minus 1/2. Which are constant. During a given time step. Because again, this is part of the self-similar solution. So we'll replace the exact Riemann solver an approximate, i.e. cheaper Riemann solver. And this essentially defines the class of Godunov type schemes. Or Godunov type methods. They differ. This is not entirely fair, the statement, so they differ in a few details. So the most important being the Riemann solver, but also the way how reconstruction is done, as I mentioned earlier. And so over the last few decades, a few such approximate Riemann solvers have been proposed and been applied to many, many different problems all across physics, astrophysics and cosmology, obviously, but also in engineering and applied mathematics. And so a lot of these sort of properties and advantages and disadvantages have been looked at both at the sort of theoretical level, but also at the practical level. And so one of the first ideas was by Rowe, who essentially proposed to replace the actual Riemann problem by a linearized version. So the idea being that at a cell interface, usually what we would expect in most cases is that the jumps are not huge. And so essentially a linearized version of the equations should do the job. And writing down the actual solution of a linearized or a linear Riemann problem is much easier than for the full nonlinear case. So the hope is that if we sort of locally assume all these Riemann problems to be linear, that we get a good approximation to the actual solution. If our grid cells are sufficiently small. And so this was essentially the first idea, because for the linear Riemann problem, the solution can be written down in a much easier way and obtained in a much cheaper and easier way. And so this was one of the first sort of ideas. And you'll find a Rowe solver in almost all the modern computational codes as well as one choice to choose. So I wanted to discuss this Rowe solver in some detail, or at least give you some basic ideas of how it actually works. So we'll replace all the local nonlinear Riemann problems by linearized problems. So sort of more formally, if you wanted to write this down more formally, the proposal would be the following. will replace the Riemann problem posed at the cell interfaces by a linear problem of the following form. So replace it by a quasi-linear approximation to the nonlinear equation, and then solve the Riemann problem for this quasi-linear version. So that's always, it's just centered as all around zero. So let's say that this is always centered as, meaning this, the local cell interface is always x equals zero, just to make things a little easier. And so this matrix that we introduced here, and that is supposed to approximate the actual system of conservation laws, needs to satisfy a few conditions. So for this to be a reasonable approximation, and I'll explain this in a second in a little more detail. So the first condition is sometimes referred to as conservation across discontinuities. So I'll explain this in a second. So essentially this just amounts to choosing this matrix A that approximates or that is supposed to be a representation, an approximation to the actual conservation law. So that this quasi-linear problem actually picks out the correct shock speed. So this is exactly related to what we discussed earlier about picking the right weak solution. So in general, any such quasi-linear problem will have different weak solutions, but you can sort of tweak it in some fashion that that it finds the right shock speeds that are consistent with the nonlinear conservation law. And one can essentially boil it down to this requirement here. So this just guarantees that going to a quasi-linear problem, we still hope to find the correct shock speeds. Then the second requirement is that it should be consistent with the actual conservation law, meaning that it should approximate the actual Jacobian of our conservation law. So this is what is referred to as consistency with the exact Jacobian. And then the third requirement is obvious. So it should still be, it should still retain hyperbolicity if the original system was hyperbolic. So we need to assume that this matrix has only real eigenvalues and complete set of eigenvectors. Okay, and essentially this defines the idea. So just to be very precise, sometimes people refer to this as the row scheme, and the row scheme is just the Godunov scheme where one replaces the exact solution of the Riemann problem by the approximate row solver. Exact solution to the local Riemann problem. The exact solution. To this quasi-linear. To this approximate quasi-linear, or to this quasi-linear approximation to the actual conservation law. So this essentially defines the idea by row. And so I just noticed that time is up, and so we should stop here. And so next time we'll discuss this a little more and motivate some of these requirements here, and show how we can actually apply this also to the Euler equations. So next time we'll discuss the row solver in a little more detail, and then also move on to the so-called HLL for Hartan, Lux, and van Leer. Which is another family, so this actually defines a whole family of approximate Riemann solvers, and so those are the most widely used ones that essentially all codes make use of, and you'll find in all hydrodynamics codes. So we'll then also start to discuss those. We'll see that the row solver has a few limitations that the HLL family of solvers actually overcomes. And so this is why they're sort of thought to be more robust and more widely used today. So more on approximate Riemann solvers on Thursday.